Accession number 13142, Rule 3.
So known as Real 4. So you were telling me about doing your work with the lorries going up Italy.
Yeah, well, and then we came, we was right at the front then. There was one particular place, we called it the Mad Mile. It was more than the Mad Mile, but it was about 13-mile round trip. If you missed the entrance to our camp, you had to go all the way around again because it was one way. And all the way on this road, you're under fire, you know, you could be under fire. So you sort of didn't hang about.
Whereabouts in Italy was this?
It was, I'm not sure if it was a place called Larino, but it was somewhere the other side of Castel del Sangro. Castel del Sangro was a village, and we used to have to go up steps with the lorry in there. The road, I think, was blown out, and we went up these steps to get through there. But I know there was this place, I can't remember, I'm sure it was Larino. Anyway, there was this front line, and I know that where we were camped, there was about 8 or 10 tall trees which they started to use as a firing point, so we chopped them down, and you ought to be the Italians grumble about that who live there, but we, you know, we did chop them down. And then we went to Vasto, a place called Vasto. I believe Montgomery had his headquarters there, so that was, you know, and two or three interesting things happened there. Not in the order that they happened, but there was a tidal wave while we were there, and it inundated some of our lorries, and it snowed, and it wasn't supposed to. And our job then, though, we were in what they called a bridging brigade, Royal Engineers, and what we did was take bridging components down to the riverfronts, and then they would put the bridges up, and we would come back. We did the Morro, Chiatino, and loads of little bridges. We used to go out at night with a load of bridges, you know. And the same thing there, there was places there where you were under fire, you know. They used to say, well, you can go slow, as fast as you like, you know. And we never lost anybody, actually, but we, you know, was there. They used to lob these mortar shells, but they missed.
So you were supplying the Royal Engineers with bridge parts for bridging rivers?
Yeah, excepting that we were under orders of the engineers. We did what they said. You know, when we went out in convoy, it was an engineer officer in charge, and he took the convoy, and he knew where we were going. And he decided when we got tipped, and I think, you know, it's a bridging regiment, I suppose you'd call it now. They used to call that place there the Marine Drive, when you get shelled. But one of our kids, he had a breakdown, you know, like a nervous breakdown. Didn't go away, but it didn't let him stop behind.
From the shelling?
Well, from, you know, the tenseness of all of it. Yeah, the shelling and being, because of the, what do you call it, the tracer bullets coming across and all that. I'm saying nobody got killed. We didn't lose anybody. I know when we was up at the, I think it was the last one, I'm not sure if it was a Chiatino, we call it the Cheat House Bridge, if you can imagine how we pronounce that.
And Cheat House?
Yeah, that's right. And I know I was on an escarpment one day, and you know, when you've been like all that time in the war, which we had, and seen all these different things, you're a bit blasé when there's anti-aircraft shells going off and all this banging. You don't bother about it, whatever they say. I know I was I was bothered about it, but I was sat in my truck and up against the escarpment, and it was solid rock, and I thought, well, I'm as safe sat here against this wall as walking about, because at least, you know, there's some metal above me. And I was reading a magazine, Basin Full of Fun, they called it, all sorts of jokes, and then I know the sergeant come up, he says, oh, come up. What, he said, what are you doing there, reading that? He said, there's a bloke just being killed over there. So I said, well, I can't do anything for him, can I? What can I do? And he was slapping more than me. And I mean, and then they were messing about there. There's this bloke with half his head sticking out here, his brains, like. And they're putting mirrors to see if he's still breathing. I could tell him he was dead. But I didn't want to go and look at that. I would rather look at a base full of fun. But not for the reason, not because I was all that brave. I didn't want to go and see. But you see, that's one of the things. It's how to come back, isn't it, your memories?
Yes.
I can remember going back to the Western Desert when one of these, I think it was a Hurricane, maybe a Spitfire, went straight up in the air and come straight down again. And I was shaving. I know the officer, Lieutenant Kamenish, he was a solicitor from Liverpool. He come to me and he says, "You're heartless." I said, "Well, how was that?" He said, "You never missed a stroke when that bloke killed there." And all the other people are running across to look at it, you see. He said, "They're all going to help." I said, "They're not, they're going to nick his watch." And they were. But anyway, I said, "He's dead." I said, "I don't want to see him." I said, I am heartless. I'm windy, if you like. I don't want to go and look at that." Old Kamenish. I've only seen his name in the paper once since the war.
But was that usual, to take watches off dead bodies?
No, I think they did. I knew an old went across, Mad Taylor, he would have took it. Since he came back to England, he'd put in prison for rustling.
Rustling cattle?
Yeah, up in Scotland. He was a right villain.
So, if we can pick up the story in Italy what you were doing there?
Oh, yeah, well, we you know, obviously, up and down, more or less the same. You forget, like, but you were getting shot at and bombed and all that kind of thing. And then eventually, they decided that we should go across to the Fifth Army side. So, and I'm not sure the name of the place. I know it was near, the signs kept saying Campobasso, but I don't think we ever went into Campobasso. But we went across the Apennines, and we were the last convoy across, and with great difficulty getting across with the snow and ice. So it was early on, in 44. Must have been after Christmas. And we went across the other side. I know I have, you know, lovely blood flow, and there was one old kid there, I know he couldn't get his chains on. I remember putting a change on for him, and he felt me out. He said, "Well, your hands are still warm." I said, "They will be if you keep working." But we got across and put our scrim nets down and our chains on and got to the other side. Oh, and there's one thing that happened before that, which perhaps might be worth a mention, is that somewhere, and I couldn't say where, but somewhere in Italy, another unit came and was in, like, the opposite field to us, like, say, you know, 200 or 300 yards away. And I didn't know this unit, but my stepbrother was in that unit. And he came to our unit and had a word with me. So I went across there and saw that OC, and he posted him to our company there and then. And he was with us. I had my stepbrother with me, because she could claim him, you see. And so my brother. So we got across to the other side. And I can't remember what we had. I think it was something to do with the New Zealand division, whatever we had. But I can't remember what load it was on supplies. But we took something out, it didn't go empty. And when we got to the other side, we weren't actually at Casino, but we were in that area. And there's another monastery there, which was in our hands. And I know that we had to do this trip. There was me and my stepbrother. I call him my brother. And another lad. What did they call him? His name's in that book. We had to go up to this monastery and take them some food because they'd been, you know, cut off. And because halfway up, the engine went on the truck that my brother was driving, so I was towed all the way up and all the way back. But when we got up there, it was so cold that when he took his boots off, because we had to sleep in the back of the wagon, froze to the bottom of the truck and stuck on. He had to hammer we did that. I don't know what they call that place, but it was in the vicinity of Casino where we stopped for about I thought, I think we stopped more than 10 days, maybe a fortnight there. And then we went to Naples. I believe they went to Naples to get a boat back to England, because what was happening there then at that time? All the old soldiers were being repatriated, the ones with long service, because our unit had been out there since about 1930, 32. And they were all old soldiers, even I'd been out 4 years. And I was a territorial. So they were all... So they were, I suppose they must have said, well, it's pointless this, we might as well send a lot home. So instead of, you know, keep sending a dozen or 20, they sent the whole company and left the ones that had only been a few days, among them my brother, like. And they were all ready to go, and then something else happened that... I don't know if it's happened since, but Vesuvius erupted. This volcano, so we didn't get on the boat anyway, so we were rescuing all these civilians from San Giorgio and all places like that. And then, you know, when that sort of finished, we we were working off the docks with the Americans, as you say, where we were with Americans, and we were getting bombed just the same. The Germans were bombing the docks at Naples. We were just outside. We were on the escarpment at a place called Posillipo. All the top brass was at Posillipo, and we were parked on the escarpment, you know, with our trucks, and we stayed there. We lost one man there, I know for sure. Well, not exactly there. What happened was he got burnt, and they sent him back to England. And, you know, he was cured, apparently. You know, he burnt all his hands and that, and he was to do all the sort of rubber balls and that. But they burnt his face. So they decided to do an operation plastic surgery, because he died under the plastic surgery after he'd been cured. So when we went home, actually, on this boat, Empress of Australia, we sailed back on. And... we all collected, I think we got about £350, which in those days was a fortune. I think we were only on about 2 and 6 a day. About, what's that, about less than a pound a week anyway.
So what was the £350 for?
Well, for his missus, you know, for his wife, like, because she'd lost her husband, and that was, you know, because we'd all got this Italian money, so we all bummed it in, you see. No. And then we got to England, and then they said, right, you're going on the invasion. And I forget when we landed.
D plus something, anyway.
Pardon?
D plus something.
Oh, well, when we landed in England, it was before the invasion.
Oh, I see, landed in Britain.
Yeah, we landed in England well before the invasion. So... You see my book. I mean, the only leave that I got was 3 days, 2 days in Alexandria and 3 days in Naples, and that was the only actual leave that I ever got after leaving England to come away. And it was stationed in Haifa, so you probably wouldn't need leave there. But we got into England, and they said, there's your trucks, and they're loaded. And we were going to, on the invasion, they were loaded with there were Dodges loaded with Greyhound engines, whatever they were for, I don't know. And they sent us on leave and called us back to go on this invasion. I know that I was down in Cornwall, and I know it was perhaps the 4th or 5th, you know, that we'd argued that we must have a leave, and they'd give us a leave. You know, because he said, well, we're entitled to some leave. So I'd gone to see a girl that I'd got the address of, who lived, who was old girl, but was down in Cornwall. So I'd gone down to Penzance, and I got called back from Penzance. And while I was in Penzance, I put sixpence on a horse in the Derby, and it won. I never got my money there. So I can always tell you that Ocean Swell won the Derby that year. So anyway, I came back. And then they let us finish our leave, but I didn't go back again. And then we went down to, I think it was, well, two or three places we went down. We went down to Virginia Water, near Virginia Water. There's a big, what do you call it there now, a golf course. I forgot the name of it now, but what was in that golf course, I understand, was underneath it was a big HQ somewhere there. Can't remember the name, but we was there. I know we got told off for having a fire in a golf bunker, but that's something different. Anyway, we were attached to Montgomery's HQ, and what we did, we took Montgomery's HQ from England to France.
When you say we, you mean 17
the, our company, 17 company. We chipped off these engines and we picked up Montgomery's HQ, lock, stock and barrel. And we went, whenever they went, we took them across. And I know, and I think the HQ was at Creuilly in France, and some of them got Bay Air when we got there. I think they got Bay Air on about the third day, but whatever it was, we went to France and did that. But we had, 17 company actually took Montgomery's, you know, the 21st time the group HQ across. There was even an ATS on board the ships. So that's what we did there. So it was D plus something, it wasn't plus four, it was more than that. Although I've got a letter from one fellow who insists it was 12, but I don't know where he got that from. I wouldn't know. See, they all come out pat now after the war with D plus this and D plus that. Didn't say that then. You know, nobody said it D plus, it just went. You know what I mean? It didn't count the days. You counted the days he was at home, really. But anyway, that's what we did. And then we sort of was, for quite a while, we were just stuck in a field. Well, a bocage, as they call it, with the guy. And then when they actually moved forward, we must have done something in between, but nothing memorable. Could hear the guns going off all the time, but nobody had threw anything our way. And then we went through the Valley Gap. You know, and so all these, you know, it was like, smell awful there, the dead animals and people and wagon blown up. Went through that to a place called El Beth, and we just seemed to, I don't know what we did there. We must have just delivered stuff and collected stuff. And then we went to Arras.
You said that you saw the dead Germans in the Falaise Gap. What were your feelings about it? Were you glad or sorry for them, or what?
Oh, well, I mean, you're always sorry. I mean, I can remember a place called, not Fulker, Bukbuk, I think, is it? Anyway, on the coast in North Africa, just after we left Alamein, we were running up and down, and for well over a week that we ran up and down there, there was a body of an Italian soldier whose head was on the, oh, his head had been on the road, and of course it was worn away. Never got moved. They kept going up, and like Elfire Pass, when he went up Elfire Pass, right on the top there was a minefield, and there was a lorry on there, and there was a fella, half of his body hanging out, but it was there when we went up four or five times, but nobody moved him. And again at Wadi Akarit there was a minefield there with a Gurkha just sort of like that, real smart. But they didn't move them, you know, not in a day, when they're in the minefields. You see, so, you know, sort of, you feel sorry for them, but you think, well, I'm glad it's not me, don't you? That's all.
Because the bodies could be dangerous to move.
Well, yeah, I mean, they used to booby trap them and all the rest of it, didn't they? I nearly caught one of them when we were moving the mines in Tobruk. There was a little red, what we call a red devil. It just looked like a money box. Remember the red money boxes? Well, we were picking up these telemars and slinging them in the back of the wagon. They'd been, you know, supposed to have been made safe by the Royal Engineers. Anyway, I picked up this red devil anyway, and as I picked it up, I noticed that it didn't have a little leather thong on that it should have. So I picked it up, and in the same movement, held it away, and it only went maybe halfway down that garden and went off. And there was a fellow walking the other way, never even turned round. But it would have blown my hand off if I'd have kept hold of that. So the door booby trap, somebody just pulled that and left it. So I don't know who'd done that. But that's happened.
So you were telling me about moving up through Elberth on the Seine.
Yeah, then we went to Arras. And then we sort of got right forward then. We went with the forward troops and we went through when we was in Brussels on the first day that they were in Brussels. Well, a suburb, we were in a place called Ninov. And then we were running from Brussels, which was a railhead, Skarbek station, back to, I believe it was Le Havre, and then perhaps Dieppe, when they got a bit further up. We were running night and day, up and down, for quite some time. And then we went forward again, because we was in 30 Corps then, because we were 2nd Army when we brought the HQ across. And then we went up to a place called Ternhout, which is in Belgium, and then of course we started this what they call Market Garden, but there again we didn't know what they called it. But
the Arnhem. The Arnhem. Okay.
That's right, yeah. But we were when that was on, we were in forward, I think it was a place called Vintelray, and then we went to play it. But we moved about Peak and Donk and all places like that. And then we went back to Ternhout. But the problem is, I'm saying all these things, perhaps the company HQ wasn't there. I'm just talking about the platoon, A platoon. You see, that's, you know, the company might have been Nijmegen, because we did go to Nijmegen. And then was Venlo. And then we were after all that, you know, after the Market Garden business, Christmas, I remember it because Christmas Eve we were in this village, wherever it was, I don't know.
In
the Netherlands, or in Holland, yeah. And we'd saved all our beer up, because foolishly it had frozen. So we poured out what was left and drank that, because it was all the alcohol. And I was absolutely scattered. So, and like with having the trouble with my chest, they reckoned that I was coughing up blood, I don't know. But they actually took me in an ambulance to this hospital. There was a big Scotch doctor on there. And because I didn't know what day it was, never mind what night it was. Although it was like Christmas Eve. Anyway, I got there, and while that had happened, you see, there was Strafford on the way, but there again, I didn't know anything about that. But the lad that did, he played up Pop, who was up with a lansjack, a kid called Horsfield. Anyway, when they got back, the unit was immediately mobilised that night, because they dropped all these paratroops and picked up the Gordon Islanders, and they were going across to the Ardennes. Anyway, I'm in there. Inadvertently, they'd picked up the wrong jacket. So I'm in there and they're dropping these paratroops, and there's a jacket there. Wouldn't fit me, mind you, when they looked at it, but there was a pay book in there that says Malcolm Lockyer. You see, because that's always what jacket it was. So when I wake up, like, this big Scotch fella says to me, well, what's your name then, you know, but in Scotch. So I said, it's Frank Nunes. Of course, immediately think I'm a German, you see. So they have a fellow with a rifle on the door. So anyway, that morning, like, this lansjack comes back, Tony, and he, with my jacket, and takes the other one away, and like, let me go. So we went then. We went to Marchiennes for Men in the county of Luxembourg, not Luxembourg. You know, in Belgium, there is a county, went there, this place, Marchiennes for Men. And we were with the Gordon Islanders, I don't know, I was going to say, buggering about. We had this absolutely obtuse Scottish drum major, you know, pipe major. It was as thick. One night we were going up all night, you know, and it's winter time. We went from dusk till dawn, up and down, and he couldn't find his way. We never did till it got light. And then, because we got there, and we had all the rations on for the troops, really going up and down, and it was freezing. But that's about, you know. I know when we were there, we're sort of, when you're attached to infantry, you see, you don't work as hard as when you're third line. When you're sort of general transport, you drop a load and go and pick another one, and, you know, I mean, you might work for this unit, then you'd be that unit, or this DRD, or that railhead, or roadhead, or whatever. But with an infantry unit, when you've dropped your rations, well, you just sort of sit there and wait for something else to do. Easy, really, excepting that you're a bit nearer the front. We were right sat next to these American heavy guns. They used to fire a round off about every 10, 15 minutes. They used to kick the door down. They used to sleep through it. And of course it was freezing, if you put your hand on the, it was like a bar, you know, a ten, because it didn't used to have starters, you used to swing them, these motors, in the cold weather, innit? Your hand would freeze, you know, if you didn't watch out. It really was cold there in the Ardennes. When we weren't there too long again, we did lose some people in the Ardennes. I know particularly one friend, a kid called Leonard, Bunny Leonard, he's buried there. I've been back and put a wreath on his grave. I've been back twice, actually. Then we went back again, back to the Ardennes, to the Reichswald, the Battle of the Reichswald. But I had a fortnight's holiday, I think, during that, so I missed the worst of that. The Gordons, apparently, during that, every officer was a casualty in the 5th, 7th, during that battle. And then sort of we left them. Once across the land, Rhine, that was it. You know, we actually took, collapsible boats with the Rhine, but we never put them on the water, we just sort of dropped them somewhere. But when we got... Oh, there was one incident that... I think it was a place called, I'm not sure if it was Gok or Bokol, but I believe it was Gok, where, just an incident during the war, where we had to line up on three roads, three platoons, with our vehicles, and then when the motorcycles come along, they went to, everybody switch the lights on. And we all switched our lights on, and I suppose from the air it made like a arrow, and then 400 bombers came over and knocked hell out of it. I remember that, and you could feel the ground bouncing. And then when we went through this town, there weren't really two bricks on another when we went through. But, like, we actually was as near as that to a 400 bomber raid. The same 400, I mean, it's a lot of planes, isn't it?
Yes. Gok is
on the Rhine.
In the Reichswald.
Yeah.
Reichswald.
Yeah, that would be the place. And I know we definitely went to Bocholt because... you know.